Good morning and welcome to another edition of Talking Money. This is Certified Financial Planner Mike Miller, your host for today. So glad you're with us. It's got a special treat for you today. So we're going to be talking to a more narrow audience than normal, probably, because we're talking primarily to business owners. There's some really strategic things that a business owner needs to think through well before they ever decide to sell their business that they need to be considering. So what we did at Plan First back a couple of years ago, we put together several business roundtable discussions. We have those on. We videotaped them and put them on our YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and type in a search for Plan First Business Roundtable, you'll come up with three different roundtable discussions that we had with three different panels of experts. One of those panels of experts is my guest for today, Hagen Rogers, who is an investment banker, Watermark Securities. And he's going to be talking, or Watermark Advisors, I guess it is. Let me go ahead and welcome Hagen. Good morning. Welcome to Talking Money.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us. This is first time that we've been able to be on the radio. We've known each other for a while and had these panel discussions, but we want to get this information out to a lot of people. So there are three videos there that I think are very key to watching. Now, they're longer than your typical YouTube videos, but it was designed to be informational, so that you can go back to them and really learn something. So one of them is business value and exit strategy. Another one was choosing the right buyer for your business, which is one Hagen was on the panel, along with Joel Stoudemire and myself. Joel Stoudemire is a tax attorney we worked with for many, many years, and myself were on the panel. And then the taxes and the sale of your business was the third one. So we have those three videos out there. They're free. They're about 47 minutes or so each. We edited them down to try to get to the meat of the subject that we were talking about so that you can go there anytime you want to listen, re-listen, do what you want to make sure that you are in the best position possible when it's time to sell your business, which I think is something that we really are trying to accomplish today, Hagen, is to make sure that if someone wants to sell their business, they're in the best position possible to do that.
Correct. And it's not an easy task, believe it or not.
It sounds easy, right?
Well, it sounds easy, but it's not.
So Hagen and I are looking at this M&A bridge he has in front of us. Unfortunately, we're not on TV, so you can't see it. But we're going to be going through some of this information here and trying to make sure that in our 45 minutes roughly of live time that you can get an idea of the things you need to be thinking of. So let's get a little background, Hagen, because you've talked to me about the number of people that try to sell, that don't sell, and so forth. So 2017, what happened with the people and that try to sell, maybe why theirs didn't sell?
Yeah, so just to start out, in 2017, we have some statistics that come from Pepperdine University. They do an annual review of the marketplace, and specifically in that year, but I think this represents the broader market most years, 26% of business owners that wanted to sell their company went out metaphorically on the bridge, or in other words, they went into the market to try to find a buyer and they were not able to close a deal. Doesn't mean they weren't in a negotiation. They probably were with one or several parties, but they were not able to close a transaction.
26%.
26%.
So just couldn't. And the rest of them didn't necessarily get what they wanted, right?
Yeah. So if you look at those that did sell, 42% of those transactions had some type of contingency fee to them. So what that means is they were not all cash deals. 42% had some possibly portion of the consideration for the purchase in cash, but the other was an earnout, seller note, other types of contingency fees. And based on my 21 years of doing this, most of the time that is not fully captured.
They just don't. Something happens over the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that earnout period is, that means they didn't get what they thought they were going to get when they closed that deal initially.
Correct. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's when you actually step off of the bridge. You don't step off of the bridge when you close the deal. That's the first mistake that business owners think about. Mm-hmm. But instead, you step off when you can totally value and count what was your total purchase price and did you successfully hand off your business well in a transition to the new owner.
So do they have some statistics to say the number that actually did work, that got what they wanted?
Yeah, so you know, hard to determine that, but yes, you know, I would say about half of all business owners got what they wanted in a transaction. So that's, you know, for owning your business and taking all that risk and having most of your wealth tied up in this illiquid asset,
right. Right.
To say you have a 50% chance of doing it right, not great.
So with that in mind, I mean, ideally, if someone wants to sell their business, somebody comes in, either somebody inside, somebody from the outside that says, here's a check. I'm going to give you a check for the full value that I think it's worth. You think it's worth the same amount. Ha ha. How often that happens. And here's a check and you walk away and they take it over and you don't, it really doesn't matter except for your own pride, maybe, that business goes away or doesn't go away because you got your money. But that's not typically the way they're being structured. They're structured so that it still has to be profitable and do something for the next X number of years for that buyout period.
Yes. So even kind of moving that 42% aside, a lot of times, even the business owner may sell for all cash, but they're still asked to be involved in the company in a transition period. And often that transition period could be, like you say, anywhere from 1 to several years out. It doesn't mean they're still in the role of president or CEO. It means that they're playing some kind of role that's transitioning the knowledge, the processes, and how the business is done well to the new owner.
All right. So everybody really wants to know, what's the main reason or what are the main reasons why these business owners aren't getting what they really thought they should have gotten or what they were asking or hoping for?
It's a excellent question. And to answer that, unfortunately, the problem goes back to the first phase of the bridge. So we have this in front of us. Mike and I have this board of the M&A bridge. And think about the Falls Park Bridge.
Mergers and acquisition, M&A meaning
yes.
Mergers and acquisition bridge.
So imagine the Falls Park Bridge in downtown Greenville.
Okay.
And you, the business owner, step out onto the bridge when you decide to sell your company. You don't go right to the transaction, or you shouldn't, although some do. There's the first leg of the bridge is preparation. The second leg of the bridge is transaction phase. And the third leg of the bridge is the integration phase. The problem that the business owners have, to answer your question, it's mostly in the preparation phase.
Okay. Preparation meaning what kinds of things? So if I need to make sure I prepare correctly for the ultimate sale of my business, there are certain things, obviously, and we touched on a lot of these things in those videos I mentioned before. Because we had Ann Locke, who does a lot of the financial part preparation, and Joel Stademeyer, who does a lot of the at the end, the transactions and making sure it's all set up correctly. They're all giving their part of the expertise. But we're talking about preparing this business. How far ahead before selling should you be thinking about preparing it for sale?
Not what business owners want to hear, but several years in advance.
I mean, up to 10, right? I mean, depending on the business and...
And it doesn't mean that you're running your – it's not the same thing as running your company. And a lot of business owners will say, Hagen, I'm going to have a great year this year. And the financial performance is great. Let's talk about selling the company. Even if that is the case, it doesn't mean you have prepared well for that crossing the bridge.
Yeah. Well, I had actually a client who – And several years ago, and he still owns the business, but he had this business and very successful, fairly small number of employees, but really great cash flow. And he had a outside company pursuing him to try to, he and his brother, to try to sell, to buy that company from him. And they had come down with some, what sounded like some pretty good prices to me for what they were, but he was in the middle of having one of the best years ever. So that was a hindrance to him thinking, well, I don't want to sell now because I want to get this money myself for the next year while things are going well. But that can be the best time to sell because your things are going well. So you might wait and then come up with a year that the financials aren't as good and then you can't sell it for as much.
True. And so think about selling your company. There are kind of two macro issues. One is the market timing, which you cannot control. Right. But you do want the market to be attractive. What does that mean? It means that publicly traded companies are trading at a 52-week high or a high versus several years.
Right.
That's what you're looking at as a measure. And you want to look specifically at your industry as how are the overall, the companies that are trading publicly in your industry, how are they trading today? Also, have there been a lot of deals that have closed in your industry? But besides
that, you have comps, you have something that you can
relative valuation comparables, yeah. Correct. Trading and transaction comparables. But going back to prep, kind of, then you look at internally and, okay. And it's how much of metaphorically an athlete is your company.
All right. We want to continue with that analogy there because that has a lot to do with preparation and how I think it'll make sense to how we do this. But, Hagan Rogers, investment banker with Watermark Advisors, is my guest for today. We'll be back with some more discussion on how much your company may need to be at least worked on, that star athlete, so you get the best price that you can for that when we continue with more of Talking Money in just a couple of minutes. Since I started hosting Talking Money over 11 years ago, I've had the privilege of speaking with many listeners, many of who are now clients of Plan First. Some folks came because they wanted to be sure their spouse had someone they could rely on if they died first. And it's not only a surviving wife that needs help, even though that is what many people assume when they hear that statement. Over the last year, we have helped several surviving husbands navigate the transition of losing a spouse. What a great feeling of satisfaction to our team when we can help a surviving spouse. It's the same satisfaction we get after spending time helping clients do year-end tax planning or simply helping them figure out the best Social Security claiming strategy. One of our advisors shared with me how emotional one of our clients got when we helped him plan for his retirement. I think he had a peace of mind that he didn't have when we started the process. Now, that's a great reason for us to do what we do. Of course, we're not the right fit for everyone, but we may be just the right fit for you. And there's no fee to check us out. Let's start with a phone call and see if it makes sense to go further. Go to planfirst.com and review the page that shows the Plan First team and give one of them a call if you find one that you'd like to speak with, or just give me a call. The phone number for Plan First is 1-800-588-7526. Once again, that number, 1-800-588-7526. And welcome back to Talking Money. This is an interesting discussion today. We are continuing now in our second segment, talking about business succession, talking about how to make sure you as a business owner get the best price you can for all the hard work that you spent years, decades, maybe not century, but could be half a century, getting your business together. Hagan Rogers, investment banker with Watermark Advisors, is my guest today. He's been in this business about 21 years, I think you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so he's been around the block. It's not his first rodeo, as they say, in many businesses I've heard. But it's so important to prepare well ahead of time. So this preparation, Hagan, we're talking about, so work us through, run us through, walk us through, maybe start walking before we run. What do we mean by prep and what kinds of things they need to be thinking about?
The first thing to do before you analyze how much of an athlete metaphorically your company is, I'm suggesting two steps. One is to get smart about M&A itself. The bridge metaphorically again is a whole set of unique rules, strategies, processes, language, and pitfalls that are distinctly different than running your company. And the whole there's a whole profession of people who do this for a living. So getting a sense of what does it take, what does it look like to cross the bridge successfully, that means getting smart from an education perspective. Secondly, get a valuation on the business, a fair market valuation, to determine by a third party, an independent party, what is the market value range of your company.
And how do you get that? I mean, it's not like you can look in the phone book and say, okay. Of course, some people listening say, what's a phone book? We haven't heard about a phone book in a long time. We go online and say, you just don't want to find anybody that's there and say, how are you going to value my business? Would there be an expert potentially in that particular industry that you should go to, or are the standards pretty much the same in no matter what business that you run, that you may be able to use an independent person, somebody like yourself, I guess, to do evaluation?
Yes. Yeah, we offer valuations independent of any other service, and that's important for any practitioner you pick, that they don't tie that service to anything else.
So they're like helping you sell. So a business broker says, I'll value the business. Or like your real estate, go back to selling your house. So if I'm, yeah, I'll give you an appraisal for your house. I'll spend all this time doing it, but only if you let me sell your house.
Yes, and you want to be careful of that.
Right.
But there are plenty of practitioners around Greenville, any city, that value companies. So just talking to your professional circle, you will learn of several names, and I encourage you to visit each one and get a sense of which one are you most comfortable with. At the end
they're
of the
comfortable with the one that gives them the highest price.
Yeah, right. So. That's really you want this to be a kind of a grade on your company. You want to have in your mind, what do you think it's worth, but allow the process to unfold as it will, and you don't know where it's going to land, and that's a healthy perspective. But one thing I will encourage is when you do decide on a valuation expert, make sure they put emphasis on the intrinsic value of a discounted cash flow approach or an approach like that, which goes out into the future and evaluates future cash flow streams of the business, and that they will use several different methods of valuation. That's important. You can find some people who do valuations very quick, and they don't charge a lot, but that probably does not include a DCF method, a discounted cash flow method. Very important.
And you may not find that, you may not get the number that the potential buyer, because that's what they're going to be looking at, is that discounted cash flow method, and you want to make sure that you know what's going on. I mean, I think it's if nothing else, it can be a very good, maybe mind-opening learning experience to find out what a buyer is really looking at. And you were thinking, well, I'm making good money from this. I'm getting a great salary from my business. Surely once I leave and that salary is opened up, somebody will want to pay a lot of money for this. But there's a lot of other factors in there.
Ultimately, valuation comes down to three different principles. The cash flows and the nature of those cash flows into the future, risk of those cash flows, and growth. That combination, whether you're looking at a comparables method or DCF method, it comes down to those three key assumptions as to how a practitioner values that company.
So I want to, before we get too far into this and come up to the next break, is expand this analogy a little bit about the star athlete. So if someone is, and we've talked before, I think we even did this in the panel discussion you were on, if we think about a parent who has a son who wants to play collegiate football and they're in high school or even junior high, you can't wait until their senior year in high school and say, okay, now what do we need to do to prepare you properly to join the college, or expand that to the collegiate level and say, I can't wait till I'm a senior in college and say, okay, I want to play NFL. What do I need to do now to make sure my prospects are real good? That's a little late.
That's a little late, and it's deceiving for the business owner because they may think my company is already in the big leagues or my company is fighting against the big guys. But that metaphor, that story is very relevant here, that in preparation, you need to look at your company and separate yourself from your company first, but think about how much of an athlete is your company. And there are eight different areas I say – no matter what industry you're in, no matter what size company, it comes down to these eight areas. And I can share them now.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's start. Strategy. We may not get all eight, but we'll get one we can.
Yeah, okay. Strategy. I'm just going to name them first, and we can unpack any one of them.
Okay.
Market positioning, people, processes, financial results, culture, innovations, and momentum.
There's a lot to each one of those.
There's
I know.
A lot
so to let's
each
see
one.
If we can get one or two of them in here before our bottom of the hour break. We got about 3 minutes.
Strategy is the heart of health. So it's all about
health of the company.
Health of the company.
Okay.
It's the heart. What is the vision? What's your competitive advantages in the marketplace that others can put money in, but they have a hard time catching up with you? You want your company to have those competitive advantages. That's what creates the stability of those cash flows, or the lowers the risk that you can continue to get those cash flows in the future.
So it's the things that if you were talking to a prospective customer and you were trying to convince them to do business with you versus your competitor in the next town or down the street, these are the things that you would tell them, this is why you go with us. Or when somebody's redoing your website, they want to know, what can I put in this website to differentiate you from everybody else that does what you do?
Yes, and it's barriers around that. And not just absolutely that, but beyond that, strategy is vision. It's also business model. And business owners develop their business model over time, sometimes without really thinking about it in the terms of business model. But business model is actually the secret sauce. So let me ask you a quick question. Okay. What makes Starbucks special or unique? What about their business model did they put into it that made it very unique?
Okay, so just the specialty coffees, I guess, or that this is a place I can come relax and do other things and get my coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker, so, yeah. You know, and, I'm sure, grasping at straws here.
It's not
expensive coffee. I think it's expensive coffee, but that can't be what gets people there.
Tell me about it. Not many people get this answer right, but what Starbucks figured out is they want to be that third place you're very comfortable going in your day, between your house and your office. They want to be that other place. Okay. That's at the core of their business model. Okay. Everything's built around that.
So I hinted at that a little bit. This is this nice, comfortable place you can go and sit and get the laptop and you put it in there. And that can be a problem for them at some times because people hang out too much and takes up seats and new customers can't come in. But
they want that. Yeah. They want that experience that you're very comfortable just hanging out there.
So if you like coffee, that works out really, really well, which I don't. Okay, so we're going to get to the other. We got, six left? We haven't really got the marketing position. Well, we'll get to that one, too. Yeah. So we got seven more things that you want to talk about that help get a business owner the way they need to set it up. So we'll be back with Hagen Rogers, investment banker with Watermark Advisors, after this short break. Plan First is pleased to sponsor Talking Money, now in its 12th year of broadcasting. With so many financial planning firms to choose from, I am humbled when new clients choose to work with our team at Plan First. What makes Plan First successful is not what the typical advisory firm emphasizes: good portfolio returns, new clients acquired, or the increase in assets under management. Of course, a firm needs to continue growing in order to better serve clients, and Plan First has certainly had great growth in those areas. However, our satisfaction really comes from the opportunities all our advisors have to help guide clients through life's transitions. A tax strategy that works well. A retirement analysis that brings hope to a client that is just plain tired of the day-to-day work routine. Or the surviving spouse who we help navigate the world without their partner. Our clients are the main character in this story, and we are here to walk beside each one of them through their journey. This core purpose of Plan First begins with Andrea and Tracy as they greet you at the front door. As one of our new clients wrote recently to Tracy and Andrea, "Thank you for making me and my wife feel so welcome when we were there a couple of months ago." The journey to Plan First has many paths. For many, their introduction began by attending an educational session taught by one of our advisors. Our advisor spoke at a wide variety of events in 2017, pre-retirement and practical finance classes at Michelin, women in manufacturing, and lunch and learn at Milliken, the Michelin Benefits Team off-site retreat, and the Bob Jones University Advancement Department seminar on estate planning. And we even spoke at the Greenville County Library Staff Training Day. We love to educate, so if you ever need a speaker for your church, civic organization, or at your work, we'll be glad to help. The phone number for Plan First is 800-588-7526, or you can always get more information at planfirst.com. That phone number again, if you want to start the conversation, 800-588-PLAN-7526. Now back to Talking Money. This is Mike Miller. You are listening to Talking Money. We're talking money about business owners today and business succession planning, preparing properly for that ultimate sale of your business to make sure you get the value you want out of the business and should get out of the business. But if you don't prepare properly, there's a good chance you're not going to get it, and you'll be really surprised when it comes time and somebody makes you an offer and you say, whoa, I'm not going to take that offer. But in reality, if you had prepared properly, you have a much better chance of getting that price that you want. So Hagen Rogers, investment banker, Watermark Advisors, is with me here today, and you can go to watermarkadvisors.com to get more information about Hagen's business. But he's been doing this for over 20 years, doing this M&A, mergers and acquisitions field. And it's one that's very unique and very specialized. So it's, you want to work with people who know what they're doing. And we did put together three YouTube videos for those who didn't hear the top of the hour when we started Talking Money this morning. We talked about the three YouTube videos that we put out, business roundtable discussions that Plan First put together over the last couple of years. We videotaped them, edited them, and got them down to the main topics, really the guts of the matter. And you can go to YouTube channels and go to Plan First Business Roundtable, and it'll pop up with the three roughly 47-minute videos that we did about all different types of all different parts of the business planning or business succession process. So choosing the right buyer for your business, which is one Hagen Rogers was also my guest for today, was on that panel. Taxes and the sale of your business was another one. And then business value and exit strategy was the third one. So they're, like I said, a little over 45 minutes each. They're not designed to be these quick entertainment videos. They're educational videos trying to make sure you set things up correctly. So before the break, Hagen was talking about some of the prep, getting that star athlete there as your business. We talked about strategy being the heart of all that. And so we've got seven more things we need to talk through. We make sure we get through all of them. So I'll shut up so you can start talking. So number two, market positioning.
A close cousin to strategy. Strategy, we talked about business model, and that actually has more than that. Vision, how you execute it, leadership and culture. But market positioning is really looking at that your company as it competes with others in the marketplace, and specifically where you put your investment dollars to compete more effectively. So that's when we talk about market positioning. Think about the investment dollars or your reinvestment back into your business into select areas that differentiate your business from others.
Okay. All right. Good advice there. Number three?
People.
Very
huge,
important.
Huge. Yeah. People drive the business. So we're not only talking about the leadership, we're talking about the team. We can spend many radio shows talking about this, obviously, but at the heart of this is the leadership team that you have trained up below you. Are they authentic? Are they results focused? Are they uniquely qualified?
Mm-hmm.
Are they authoritative? Meaning you want the business to be about that next tier of team that you've built up below you, because when you sell, you are going to be leaving the company, and probably you're ready to. And so it's about that. It's about all of the systems you put in place to make the empower the people in your company, not just the leadership, but the people that make it work day to day.
So I give an example, personal example. So Plan First, we have multiple tiers, as you alluded to them. So myself would be the old guard, the ones that's been there forever, still planning on being there for quite a few more years and not ready to give this up yet, having too much fun. But in order to make sure that if something happened to me, that there's other people there right in place. So we have the next generation, and then we've got kind of a middle generation, then we got the young people that are just out of school or within 5 years being out of school that are learning the processes as well. So right now, I feel like I could be gone for multiple weeks, and most people wouldn't even know I wasn't there. And of course, being skilled and having staff that know how to do your actual business doesn't mean they can actually run the business, though. That just means they're somebody else, even if they're going to buy it, that came from the outside, wants to make sure that somebody knows how to do the day-to-day stuff, that maybe the strategic part or the planning part that a business owner does, that takes a unique skill. But still, you need to have those leaders.
Yes, you need to have those leaders. And really what the buyer's looking for is they want to know that everything you've had in your head to create the business and make it successful gets out of your head into either the next level of team or processes. You document how you've built the business and how it is successful today.
Okay. kind of clone yourself. And that, your next point being
processes.
The processes. So that really is a good segue into that.
Yes.
That's how you replicate yourself, is through processes.
And well-run companies are run by processes. People run the processes, but they're very defined processes in all areas of the business. And you want to make sure that you document that you do have well-defined processes that are not onerous, but they work. And they make the business flow and run smoothly.
Yeah, and up to date.
Not
a 30-year-old computer program that's just, oh, it works fine. We've used it for this long. Be willing to innovate and keep up with those things.
Yeah, it's all about being the athlete. So it's being about being current. Absolutely.
Okay, next. Financial results.
So not just about the past or the present, but go back to valuation. A big part of valuation is about what cash flows is this company going to expect, would the owner expect to see this business generate in the future.
Even if they're gone.
And so you build that story, the strategy, and then the numbers go with the strategy. So when we talk about investable story, you want the buyer to get very excited about the future numbers and the story that goes with those numbers.
Okay.
How can this happen?
Okay. Yeah. And that also gives them an idea whether or not the team that's there buys into that same story. Are they as excited about the story as the owner who's leaving?
And did you make up this story just to sell your company, or is this something you've been running and leading with?
It's in your DNA.
They're going to test that.
Yeah.
Does everybody know the story?
Yeah.
If not, it's a story you made for the process, and that would be a big mistake.
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right, so what about the next point? Innovation or something?
Culture. First, a real quick comment on culture. Culture is huge, and culture is a big problem for the buyer, because often the buyer culture, most of the time, the buyer's culture is going to be different than your culture. So you don't change your culture just for this process, but it is culture is about how you organize the decision-making of your company. And you organize that decision-making structure so that the company can best and most effectively and efficiently execute strategy.
So the culture, this is more of a question. If somebody from the outside is going to be coming in to buy, you would assume, I guess, to a certain extent, that if it's internal succession and people internally are buying, they have that culture already. But if it's an out, not necessarily, but they may want to go a different direction, but you're speaking more of, let's make sure the culture is a good fit for whoever we merge with or sell to.
And we could spend a whole radio show just on culture as it relates to buyer and seller.
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, you want to make a culture that makes you succeed best with strategy that you're running, and it's efficient and effective, and it's not about you. It's about the decision. I mean, ultimately, you're making the decisions, but you want that next group of leadership team to also be making key decisions. Because what if somebody buys you and they're not even in this business? They can't disrupt your culture. They need to keep it as is if it's a diversification acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to know exactly how you built that culture.
Yeah. And they want to make sure it's going to be able to continue even if you're gone.
Correct.
And that's where leadership comes. All these really tie together. You can't do one without the other.
There you go.
And one gets missing, and then it's like the whole thing may fall apart. All right, so we've got a couple more things on preparation that we want to get to. We got to take one of these necessary breaks that we've got to take. So we're talking to Hagan Rogers, investment banker with Watermark Advisors. We're talking about business succession. We'll wrap this up with our final discussion after this quick break. Thank you for listening to Talking Money Today. When I co-founded Plan First over 30 years ago, my goal was to establish a financial planning firm that acted as a true fiduciary for its clients. I think we have the best team of credentialed and experienced team of advisors. Our team has helped hundreds of people navigate through the many transitions of life. We don't just give lip service to helping clients with estate planning, tax planning, retirement income planning, or social security strategies. We love to solve problems. Now, my wife will be the first to tell you that I don't like spending money on something I think I can do myself. I know many of you are the same way. That's one of the reasons you listen to Talking Money, so you can plan better on your own. But when you're ready to think about turning that responsibility over to someone else, give us a call. It doesn't cost anything to check us out, so if you'd like to find out more, give me a call at 800-588-7526 or send me an email to info@planfirst.com. Now, let me give you the phone number one more time, 1-800-588-7526. I look forward to speaking with you soon. Now back to more Talking Money. We got about 12 minutes left here in Talking Money on this Saturday morning. We're glad to have you with us today. Hagan Rogers, my guest. We're talking about preparation for your business to make sure you get the most out of it. So we'll jump right into it. If you missed this, go to planfirst.com. We'll post it next week. And you can go to Talking Money section, and we'll have it there so you can listen to it again, because some of the stuff can get kind of technical. So you have two more points there in the preparation side. Just run those by us. Let us have it.
Yeah, so again, we're talking about how much of an athlete is your company, and that's really the most important thing for you to do in preparing for a sell. The last two points are innovation and momentum.
Okay.
Quick story about innovation. So innovation is about products and services, but it's also about you can be innovative in how you run your business, adapting new ways to run the business. But so I often really am slightly skeptical when I first meet a business owner and they tell me their company is highly innovative. So, you know, a company we sold about 2 years ago when I first met the business owner and taught him in the first step, kind of a half day class on education, what does it mean to cross this bridge, M&A bridge? He said, he was checking off all these eight areas as I was going through the day. And he said, innovation, we got it. We got it.
And, okay.
And I said, really? Tell me about that. And sure enough, he was an engineer by trade, and he had bought this company in a turnaround situation in the late 90s. And he and this other guy truly had innovated these lighting controls. So if you think about lights on the highway that cut off at daylight and cut on at the end of the day, but bringing LED into that. He had really innovated these products, lighting control products, and sure enough, innovation was one of the just what made his company an athlete.
Okay,
and he did, you know, the company did very well in the exit. Innovation, that's just one story, but very important that your company has innovation in it.
And that can give you momentum, right? That's your last point there. This innovation can give you momentum.
Because what's next when you tie that to the investable story and the cash flows of the future, what are you innovating next? That's what makes the buyers very excited when you have very credible innovation building blocks, which you're building on already, what you've done. I can tell you momentum is kind of that secret sauce to the whole process, that if you have these other eight or seven areas of being the athlete, and we're in the room with the buyers, you're the seller, and you share all this, you share about what you've done, the past results, we see it in the financial numbers, you talk about strategy in the future, what you're going to do and innovate, that is the secret sauce. And I can tell you, I've had a client that when we're in that room with buyers, that's when that kind of spark happens. The buyer says, I've got to own this company. When they hear all this momentum, I've had a company that sold for 50% more than what they wanted to sell, their valuation was, because they just had all these categories together, and then the momentum was there, and we were kind of in the middle of market momentum with this athlete momentum, and that's where really sparks fly and buyers pay a lot.
Were there multiple firms trying to buy it and they were competing against each other? Is that how you got the price up there?
Exactly, and they knew that. Nice, they knew there was a process. They knew that they were there on Tuesday, and the next day we're going to meet with another buyer in several days of it. So combine that competitiveness of the process with the story, with all these eight areas. When you put all that together, that's when you can really walk across the bridge effectively. But there are technical aspects as well we want to touch on.
We want to make sure we get these technical things, because you've got we've only got not that too much, about, 8 minutes left in the program today. We want to make sure we hit. They may be more boring, I don't know, they're more technical, but they're important. So run through those with us.
So in the preparation phase, we encourage the client to, and we'll work with them to build the buyer list. So most of the time the buyers know a handful of companies that they just are they have a collegiate relationship with them. They respect them. That's great. You want that, but you also want a broader list most of the time. And we will help build out that list. Ideally, you know, if you were a private equity fund and you were trying to sell a portfolio company, they'd have 100 buyers that they would identify, sometimes more.
100, that's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. And you want that kind of leverage because it's almost like a funnel. You start with a broad list of buyers, right, and as the process moves across the bridge, that funnel gets smaller and smaller down to that one that is going to pay top dollar. So you want to not only have that list, but you want to build connectivity with those other companies that maybe you knew of, but you hadn't really built great rapport with, or mm-hmm, you have time to build it. And once you get on their radar screen, you know they are acquisitive. You're now building leverage for the transaction phase.
Are they typically in your same industry, or they could be out of your industry? But
both. Yeah, both.
The ones you're going to know the most are going to be probably ones, yes, in your industry.
Correct. Okay. But that's the job that I bring is looking at who do I see, who maybe has announced they're diversifying into another business line and really fit. So that's where research and time really helps. You come down to that list of potential buyers and you build the connectivity to them. You do that at conferences and, mm-hmm, hey, you're coming through San Diego. You're not here often. You've heard great things about their company. You'd like to meet them for lunch or coffee, but you're being intentional about not only having that list, but building connectivity.
Okay, another Starbucks meeting at coffee.
Another Starbucks.
Okay. All right, so what else? What technical other technical things we need to be looking at?
These get down to really where we do a lot of the blocking and tackling, but it's with time on your side, you can do this really well. A virtual data room is building a list of all the documents that document the processes of your company, and having those in place early, well before you market the company. That will be such a benefit to you as a business owner once you're in the transaction phase, because I can promise you once you're in that live deal phase, which can last several months, it's very intensive. And you're trying to run your company well while being a part of this process. And this process is going to take up probably 40, 50% of your time.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Even though you have hired advisors, it's that time consuming.
Because of meetings and getting numbers together, getting whatever you need to
get. Yes. Yeah. So building that VDR, that virtual data room, or having your advisor do that well before the transaction is important. The other is building your offering memorandum. That forces you to build your forecast, your projections, your story. That document is there. We'll tweak and edit it, but having that ready, and so that your team knows, it forces you to think about vision, strategy. Having that document all put together will benefit you. And that really takes care of the technical side.
Okay.
If you're the athlete and you have the virtual data room, the buyer list, the offer memorandum put together, you're really well positioned now to move when the time is right.
Okay.
One final thing, though.
Okay.
And it's wealth planning. And so this is probably your greatest asset, and you want to have experts who are experts in wealth planning, understanding what type of structure do you need.
Right.
What does this mean for you in the transition? Very important. They need to be a part of this preparation phase, and we're really working with us to think about structure, to think about what's going to be the best type of deal for you, because there are different types of M&A. We're not going to go into that today in terms of structuring.
Right.
But wealth planning, very important early on.
So a firm like Plan First, we have 3 CPAs on staff, and we've got a lot of certified financial planners, and especially with some of the ones that have had experience in M&A activity in the past, using a firm like Plan First to work with the outside advisors like Watermark and the tax attorneys and all those people to put it all together, that all on your team, and even be thinking through what's life going to look like after you sell.
Yes.
Because that's something that we help. Yeah.
It is. And that having an expert team as a wealth planning team that's working in conjunction with us, and actually that we can influence their thinking and they can influence our thinking.
Right.
You need to think about your external team. Yes, you're going to need your corporate M&A attorney and most likely your accountant to help, but there are others like the wealth planning, like the investment banker that or M&A advisor. Yeah. That makes up your external team, and making those decisions early, well before the live deal, is important.
So what size company is typical? So I ought to have at least X amount of dollars. I ought to be at least this size before I consider bringing in experts like yourself and putting that kind of team together. 2 minutes left.
Yeah. So, I would say $1 million in EBITDA is good. Even better is $2 million. If you can get your company to $2 million EBITDA, and what do I mean by EBITDA? Yeah. You probably,
probably are familiar or heard
this acronym, but earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's like your operating income, adding back depreciation and amortization. Get that number to $1 million to $2 million, and you really are going to open up a world of potential options for you on the exit, especially if you have a compelling strategy and competitive advantages.
There's a little bit of an exponential effect. The larger you get, the higher multiples you can command.
Yes, and that's definitely the case, no matter what industry. Or innovation that will be breakout, and you anticipate that kind of cash flow in the future, even if you don't have it right now.
Now, you've worked with some business owners, not just in the upstate, but really countrywide. So in our last minute, how can people get in touch with Hagan Rogers at Watermark Advisors and start the conversation?
Sure. You know, we're our number 864-527-5960. And, you know, we're a boutique, what's called a boutique M&A firm. This is my specialty. I work as much with buyers, though, as sellers. And so the point being, I know how buyers think, and I bring that leverage to help the seller.
So if somebody wants to buy a business, they can contact you as well. All right, so Plan First, number 800-588-7526, watermarkadvisors.com. Hagan Rogers, my guest, 527-5960, also an 864 number. So call Hagan. So thanks, Hagan, for being with
me
today.
Mike.
A lot of great information.
Great time being here.
All right, so have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
You too.